Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time film cynic.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that tries its best to get along, which, strangely enough, has never been a serious problem. The same can't be said for the characters in the two films that we'll be discussing during this show. The first one is played by Sally Hawkins in the film Bring Her Back, a study of what happens when, following the death of their father, two teenagers are sent to live with a foster caregiver, played by Hawkins, who carries a dark side. Then we have Mountainhead, an HBO Max streaming feature focusing on four rich guys, three billionaires, and a millionaire who hasn't yet earned his B badge, whose self-absorbed obsessions, both professional and personal, threaten to throw the whole world into chaos. Let's begin by heading to a suburb of the Australian city of Adelaide. That's where 17-year-old Andy, played by Billy Barrett, and his younger and legally blind stepsister, Piper, played by 14-year-old Sora Wong, end up following the death of their father. Met by foster parent Laura, played by Sally Hawkins, they, at least Piper, are greeted warmly. But soon enough, Andy suspects that something just isn't right, not just with Laura, but also with another of the foster children, Oliver, played by Jonah Rhys Phillips. Directed by the twin brothers Danny and Michael Philippou, and co-written by Danny Philippou and Bill Hensman, Bring Her Back blends supernatural references with your typical slasher-type horror to create a hybrid kind of movie experience, one that is liable to upset anyone sensitive to, say, someone attempting to eat a butcher knife or gnaw on a frozen corpse. Bring Her Back may not add much to the treasure trove of world cinema, but it should make an impact on anyone who watches it, though that's not necessarily a compliment.
I'll start with a few words about the Philippous, because I think they've had a really interesting trajectory. They're like in their early 30s, they're twin brothers from Australia, as you mentioned, and they started out as YouTubers, making the kind of, you know, stupid videos that teen boys like to post on the internet. But they eventually graduated to making more sophisticated horror shorts that got the attention of actual movie studios. And I learned on their Wikipedia page that they partially financed that early work by participating in paid medical trials, which might explain where they got some of their disgusting ideas that now show up in their horror features. But they put out a movie in 2022, their theatrical directorial debut, called Talk to Me, which was a huge sleeper hit. If you know A24, the distributor, it's their third highest grossing movie ever. I looked at the list. It's ranked behind Everything Everywhere All at Once and ahead of Hereditary. It's their highest grossing horror film. It made $92 million worldwide off a budget that was less than $5 million. So that movie really kind of came out of nowhere and found a big audience. And that film, if you haven't seen it, Talk to Me. It centered on this group of teenagers that got a hold of a severed, embalmed human hand. And when you touch it, it possesses your body with a spirit, and they turn it into some kind of demented party game. And it predictably goes awry. And I have seen that movie. I thought it was a promising debut, but I also thought that it emptied its bag of tricks before the movie was over, and eventually it didn't really have anywhere to go. And I kind of felt the same way about this second feature, Bring Her Back. Starting with the good, I think these guys, the Philippous, I mean, they're born stylists. There are some incredible shots and visual ideas in this movie. I also like that in both of these films, they've taken the supernatural at face value. They don't over-explain anything. These strange occurrences are just fact, and we have to go with them. There's this running thing in the movie. I don't want to spoil too much, but these very strange videos that the Sally Hawkins character is looking at, the movie never tells you where those come from or exactly what it is you're looking at. And I think that's the right choice. I think keeping those things deliberately murky gives a little bit of intrigue, because certainly the rest of the movie explains itself quite a bit.
Well, I think that the strength of that is that you can take the movie on face value then. You can say, oh, well, this is just something that is going on in this woman's mind, and she's convinced everyone around her that, ooh, this is, you know, and it could just be a normal craziness.
It's a smart choice. I like that. I think my problem with them as filmmakers, and again, this is only their second movie, and they're still young, and they have things to learn. I just don't think they know how to modulate things, especially when it comes to horror, because this movie starts out, and everybody's edges are already frayed. The level of intensity stays pretty much at 11 from beginning to end. And that can work in a movie like Hereditary, which is this, you know, hysterical gothic nightmare. But I also think that movie has more intriguing things to say about grief and dysfunctional families, which Bring Her Back is also trying to do. And again, like Talk to Me, I think this film exhausts all of its ideas before it's over, and it kind of paints itself into a corner. And I also think they mistake amping up the gore with increasing the dramatic intensity. And I think it has a lot of horror filmmakers make the opposite effect sometimes. I think sometimes too. But I do have to say that this gets extremely gory in places. And I was impressed by the special effects, but it did feel like cheap shocks.
Yeah, this poor kid, Jonah Rhys Phillips, boy.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's pretty troubling.
He was put through some stuff.
And I think I was equivocal about using the girl with amblyopia as part of the plot device. You know, I sort of went back and forth because some things would not have been possible but for her visual impairment. And so that sort of bothered me in some ways. I mean, I don't know if it struck others similarly. And also, I mean, it is a commentary on, like you were saying, not only dysfunctional families, but the foster care system generally. Now, we don't really know, or I don't really know what it's like in Australia, for example. But, I mean, that's a serious issue. And so I was a little bit put off by that. And I was surprised by the fact that Sally Hawkins, you know, an award-winning performer, was in this. So I don't really know how that played out. Maybe you know more about that backstory than I do. And then there are a couple of, like, humorous moments in the film. Like, at one point, the social worker who's doing a cursory home inspection sort of lays down this joke. And I was like, oh, okay, the film either needed more of that or not to include that, to my way of thinking.
Although Bring Her Back is so over the top in certain places, particularly in its violence, that I did laugh. I mean, you mentioned, Dan, in the opening, the scene involving the knife that is so sick and wrong.
Oh,
that,
I had to switch.
That I had to laugh just out of sheer admiration for, like, how disgusting. Like, who thinks of something like that? And then who decides to put it into a movie? Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes I admire things that go too far.
And so far, what we've been dealing with, or what we've been mentioning, are the negative parts of the movie Bring Her Back. But let me mention the things I liked. I loved Sora Wong. The movie opens with her, and she's just your typical tween talking to her friends, and they think she's weird. And, you know, when her brother comes up, she just pretends, she just blows him off like, I don't even know who this guy is, pedo. I mean, it captures the voice of a tween so well. And you mentioned Sally Hawkins, Mary Pat. I think this woman can't do anything wrong. This she's never done a straight horror movie before. She's done comedies. She's done classic films, the remake of Jane Eyre. She's done so many different things.
The Shape of Water. Which is, you know, flirting with horror.
Flirting with horror, but it's more sci-fi, fantasy, romance, you know. But this, she brings more to the character than, say, just a one-note crazy woman performance.
Well, and we do know that ultimately this is a film about grief. The children's loss of their father, you know, the loss of others in the movie.
Andy's loss of his childhood because of the treatment by his father.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the smartest thing that the Philippous do in Bring Her Back is casting Sally Hawkins, because what they're essentially doing is directing her to deliver the same kind of performance she would deliver in, say, a movie like Mike Leigh's Happy Go Lucky, which is the movie that I think a lot of us first noticed her in. So she's doing this kind of broad, eccentric, kind of cuddly, but also kind of off-putting character, but they're sort of weaponizing it in a way where those eccentricities become scarier the more that we understand about her. I just wish the rest of the movie were as smartly modulated as her performance.
Well, and I would also like to give a shout out to Billy Barrett, who plays Andy, because
the kids in this movie are
spectacular. Yeah, because he did a great job as a teen. You know, he's conflicted about all these things, and the Sally Hawkins character is gaslighting him, and he's trying to figure out, you know, what's real, what's not
real.
And
it's that classic thing where he can't get anyone to listen to him.
And he can't do anything right. I mean, you know, every single whole thing falls apart, and it's not his fault, and yet the fault is going to fall on him.
But yeah, I think it's safe to say that I think these guys do have a future as filmmakers. I think if they have a script that's as strong as their visual sense and as strong as
correct,
their sense
correct.
Of performance, I think they could really have something here. So far, these two movies have left me a little bit cold, but it seems like a lot of other people really like them. So, you know, your mileage may vary, I guess.
And, you know, we just have to point out that this is a different kind of horror film. It has all the horror in it, but as we've talked about, other themes making it a little bit richer. So, but watch out for the violence because, boy, it is tough. At any rate, that was our discussion of the Australian import, Bring Her Back. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the HBO Max streaming feature, Mountainhead. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Meet Spokane Public Radio at a farmer's market near you this summer. Grab some fresh local produce and stop by our booth to pick up SPR fans, window stickers, and station information. SPR staff, volunteers, and hosts will be in our community at farmer's markets this summer. Visit the events section on SpokanePublicRadio.org to learn when and where you can meet us at the market.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I debated the virtues, such as they are, of the Australian-made horror film Bring Her Back. Let's now turn to something quintessentially American, the meeting of four rich guys in an unbelievably posh Utah ski hideaway as they scheme and compete to control what amounts to the very future of the world. While some of us don't find much that's funny about the actions of the oligarchs who control vast swaths of America's economy, at least some of them do, they actually are perfect targets for satire. And satire of a sort is exactly what writer-director Jesse Armstrong attempts to pull off with the HBO Max streaming feature Mountainhead. Using a play on the word fountainhead, the title of novelist social critic Ayn Rand's 1943 novel The Fountainhead, Armstrong is intent on examining the self-absorbed behavior of four longtime friends who have gathered for what is a long-delayed reunion poker night in which there are not to be any deals, meals, or high heels. Three of the friends, played by Steve Carell, Corey Michael Smith, and Rami Youssef, are billionaires, while the fourth, played by Jason Schwartzman, is worth a mere $521 million. But all engage in the same kind of behavior, which swings from typical male banter, homophobia being as much a means of insult as it is a reference to economic status, to the demands of their respective businesses, three of which are suffering because of an app developed by one that is spreading disinformation and causing widespread violence. Vain, greedy, manipulative, and self-important beyond a fault, the four represent Armstrong's hope to find humor in focusing on characters who, despite the occasional funny sequence they engage in, are clearly, and a little too obviously, despicable.
Dan, as usual, you gave a really apt description of what happens in Mountainhead. So in terms of backstory, I'm not sure I need to add a whole lot. Part of the difficulty here is the fact that Jesse Armstrong, you know, was responsible for the multi-season series Succession, where over time he was able to work with particular characters, create a huge backstory for each of them, and, you know, was also working with some A-list actors, as is the truth to some extent here. But Brian Cox, Jeremy Strong, Sarah Snook, even some of the
Kieran Culkin.
Yeah, exactly. You know, gave him a lot to work with. And so in some respects, I think this was a professional error on his part, moving into what could be an extension of Succession. So Jesse Armstrong's Mountainhead does some of the same things, but it doesn't connect the dots for us. It doesn't like close the deal. And it's so off-putting to me, at least to my way of thinking, in terms of the jargon and lingo and so forth, that you really have to like sort of keep up all the time, which we would be willing to do, certainly, if any of these characters had any socially redeeming value whatsoever. Because obviously this tram, this media company that Corey Michael Smith has created, you know, sort of intersperses deep fake images with reality, which should be damn scary to everyone. But no one really seems to be focused on the underlying problem with that, but rather the other three characters are focused only on the monetary impact on their own personal fortunes and welfares and so forth. And so I think there were some missed opportunities here for the storyline to, one, tell us more about each of these characters because we know virtually nothing about them, and also to give someone in Mountain Head some socially redeeming value, because it really takes a twist like two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the film that I just couldn't go with. So Mountain Head would not be on my list of top anything films, streaming or theatrical, for this year, at least thus far.
Oh, man, I could not wait for this thing to end. It is unfunny. It's one note. It's repetitive. I don't know what the purpose of this is, except to tell us that the super rich are despicable, which I think, you know, we know
maybe
already.
Maybe it too much mirrors reality.
I think that's okay, too. I just think you have to have something to say beyond that. And this movie, we were talking off mic before because Mary Pat and I were big Succession fans and Dan didn't see it. And, you know, we were talking about how every review of this movie, Mountain Head, has focused on the fact that it's not as good as Succession. And I think that's because this movie wants so badly to be Succession, but it doesn't have any of the wit of that show, none of the irony, none of the intrigue. I mean, the cinematography of this movie looks like Succession. The musical score by Nicholas Britell sounds like Succession. You know, Jesse Armstrong cut his teeth with Armando Iannucci in things like The Thick of It and In the Loop and Veep. And he has this penchant for dialogue that's full of four-letter and four-syllable words. And the actors on all of those shows, including Succession, made meals out of that dialogue. But here, these actors, who I have loved in pretty much everything else, they sound like the understudies of the original cast. Like, none of it lands. And I think it's also because none of these actors have actual characters to play. Like, you can totally center a story on people that are irredeemable, that are ruining the planet, if that's what the concept of your movie is. And certainly that's what Mountain Head is about. But you still have to give us something to latch onto beyond that, like whether it's some kind of unexpected humanity, whether it's evil that is so over the top, like in, you know, like a Doctor Strangelove type scenario that you almost can't believe it. But I just thought these four guys were so dull. And also, they're all kind of the same. Like, there's not enough variation between
the
characters.
I mean,
so
they're almost fungible. And one of the good things about Silicon Valley, for example,
the series from way back when,
tech bros and Succession were, you know, they had a couple of female characters that really added something. Now, I'm sure they would not have wanted to have a sleepover with anybody wearing high heels. But I think that might have been a mistake, too. In terms of not having some female protagonist or antagonist in this whole thing, because, you know, it just got boring. I mean, it was boring. It was sort of like a bunch of nerds were trying to be wannabe frat boys from back in the day and gouge each other's eyes out.
And none of us are anything like nerds, that's for sure.
I'm not going to disagree in any way with either of you, but I did enjoy the first half much more than I did the second half, because I don't think the movie ever goes anywhere.
No.
And, you know, we talked about characters. I was most faulting of Steve Carell, because Steve Carell is a guy who can play both drama and comedy, but he's stuck in the middle here somewhere. And the closing scene of the film centers on him. And it's like, what are we supposed to make of that?
He's also gotten a particularly bad health diagnosis as Mountain Head
His character,
begins,
yes.
And we think that that is
he's
going to pay
be
off
a factor
some way.
Somehow.
And, and that would be a very interesting conflict, is if all of a sudden he's facing mortality. And it does sort of deal with a little bit where it's all these tech billionaires that want to live forever. It deals with that a little bit, but not in a way that's clever or satirical or, you know, trying to find some kind of truth.
I have to say that I did laugh at least once And that was when, at one point, when Jason Schwartzman's character says, "Oh man, I just wanted us to have a nice weekend, and now we're going to kill Jeff." Yeah, I did laugh at that. That was pretty funny.
Well, and we've gotten so many dark comedies about the uber elite in recent years. I mean, other than Succession, you have the Knives Out movies, Triangle of Sadness, The Menu, The White Lotus, Squid Game, now Mountain Head. And it's
what was that movie with Channing Tatum?
Blink Twice. Yes. Death of a Unicorn from earlier this year. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously a topic that's ripe for satire, but I don't think it's enough anymore to simply observe that the 1% is manipulating the rest of us for not only financial gain, but their own entertainment. Like, we know that. We know that. And I think what made Succession work, because Succession is also about those things.
Well, right. But Succession, some of them failed.
Right.
And failed spectacularly.
That's the thing that's brilliant about Succession, is it's basically like a Shakespearean drama. And all these people are happily screwing each other over, but hardly anyone gets
up,
but hardly any of them gets what they actually want at the end. And so that's kind of what made it so dishy and watchable. And again, Mountainhead wants to have those same qualities, but I think it just whiffs on pretty much every level. It was so bad that I said out loud at one point, was Succession actually that good? Which I know, I'm going to walk that back. It's not really true. I do love Succession, but yeah, I thought this was just
well, and another problem here was the fact that it became claustrophobic. They're in this beautiful location, and they go outside.
Which is a
like,
real location outside Park City.
It's beautiful.
And they go outside like one time, you know, in their little matching outfits or whatever.
And they scream at the top of a mountain.
Right. And that was one of the highlights, I think, of Succession. It used all these different filming locations and so forth. And so this even put us more in this world where we did not want to be.
Like a one-act play.
No, I did want to be in that place.
Oh.
Just not with those guys.
Just okay,
with
those good guys. Point.
That bowling alley in the basement house was pretty nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And how many different bathrooms? Whatever. At any rate, that was our discussion of the HBO Max streaming feature, Mountainhead. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the big screen horror feature, Bring Her Back. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the author Bird Nash in her novel Delicious Death. It was morbidly fascinating to hear rich people discuss what to do with the rest of us. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.